On the show today, we have True Life fellow credit union's very own Mark Schaefer talking about his upcoming retirement at the end of 2019, being the leader of True Life fellow credit union for 25 years. This was a very special conversation, so I hope you check it out. Hey everybody, Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. Welcome to our show, and you guys are in for a treat today. We have True Lion's very own Mark Schaefer in our virtual studios, and you guys, you just made an announcement, Mark, that you're retiring at the end of 2019 after 25 years of leading True Lion. Congratulations!
Thank you, Mike. Really appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. I mean, my initial thought is like, so how does it feel to kind of exhale now, because before the recording you were talking about your successor and kind of the transition process and continuity and all that type of stuff, but how does it feel to just kind of go, oh, I can breathe now?
it feels great because I was trained as an international banker at Thunderbird, and so I guess I thought my career would be in banking. But when I landed in credit unions in 1982, initially as controller of U.S. Postal Credit Union, then as CEO of FDIC's mm-hmm. credit union, and then the last 25 years here at True Lion, I realized how fulfilling and valuable it was in terms of being able to look back on a career where you've helped so many people. And so it feels good. It feels good. Of course, it also feels good to set the timing of your own departure, if you will, as opposed to being asked to leave or whatever.
Yes.
It's also good to kind of leave on a high, you know.
Right.
And I won't take all the credit for that, but you know, certainly we've had a good economy since the recession.
Mm-hmm.
Most credit unions, like True Lion, have grown and have done extremely well and are financially extremely well positioned for the future. So that feels really good. So,
yeah. Speaking of which, I mean, because when you started at True Lion 25 years ago, it was $400 million in assets with 110,000 members, a decent sized credit union for that time, actually. So, and now you guys have grown it to $2.5 billion and 248,000 members. You're the third largest credit union in North Carolina with 33 branches. So what have been, talk about, speaking of growth and kind of setting the table and kind of setting the table nicely for many, many years of growth to come. But what have been some keys to growth over the years that you guys have done over there?
Well, you know, when we hit $1 billion, all the reporters called me and said, hey, you hit $1 billion. And I always like to remind people, it's in the banking, it might be about the assets, but in credit unions, it's about who have you helped.
Right.
And so we're actually more like 2.7 billion now. It all that says is that you had a lot of people that trusted you to help guide them, and they believed you, and they put the money in your institution for savings and
right.
investment, and then you were able to lend it to them and other members.
Mm-hmm.
It just denotes trust and belief in the credit union model.
Mm-hmm.
So I try not to get too crazy with the numbers, and of course, you know, with several trillion and $2 trillion banks in the country,
yeah.
we're in Charlotte pretty heavily, as well as here in the Triad, and Jamie Dimon just announced 21 new branches just like that in Charlotte.
Oh, is that all? And okay.
We got Wells Fargo there, we got Bank of America there, and now we got Jamie coming. So, you know, it's not about the size. You know, it's more about are you providing something special mm-hmm. that consumers find compelling? Because it's a choice. You know, the big fight back in '98, the Credit Union Membership Access Act that we were a key part of. That was what it was about, is giving consumers a right to choose.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, you have to make sure they do choose.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been fortunate in that many consumers have chosen True Lion for their financial services.
Yeah, yeah, and it's also the impact that you're making on the community as well. Because I always, ever since I've been in the credit union industry, it's always been, I've kind of come up with the saying, it goes far deeper than the transaction. And that's what credit unions do. They go way deeper than the transaction or the depositor or the loan. They really make an impact on their community, and they're just part of it. And that's what I see you guys doing as well, right?
Well, certainly, you know, with the member, you know, we do a thing called a true financial checkup. We're trying to find out what is the value proposition for that member.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We built 10 branches in Charlotte in about 26 months, so we were there already, but we really went back in strong. But reporters I would tell a reporter, you know, a member comes in and wants a $50,000 car loan, often they would leave with a $25,000 car loan for a perfectly nice Camry, and an education fund for their kid.
Or
money for their retirement.
Yeah.
That's the difference. It was guidance. And of course, you know, Wells Fargo to us was kind of the gift that kept on giving, because, you know, they you know, that clearly wasn't about helping the consumer make the right choices.
Right.
It was about how do we make the most money off of the consumer. And fortunately, you know, our mission and our long-term vision allowed us to provide guidance to consumers so that they made the best long-term decisions for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you grow, because you build trust and confidence and belief in what we do, and people recognize it as something different and something better.
Mm-hmm.
And then they then choose to trust you and allow you to provide the guidance, and then they bring their deposits with you, and then they make their lending decisions
mm-hmm.
with you. So it all works together.
Right.
But you're right, we also then participate heavily in our communities. We're embedded in our communities. It's part of why we're not subject to the Community Reinvestment Act, right? We are the community.
Mm-hmm.
Our members are they own us, and they are the community. So I always try to dampen people's charitable giving expectations a little bit, because like many credit unions, we're a low-income designated credit union. So more than, in our cases, over 60% of our members would be considered low to median income by the definition.
Mm-hmm.
And so we give back to them by providing affordable financial services, low fees, you know, better savings and deposit rates,
right.
Lower loan rates. And so all of that is part of how we give back to our 240,000 members.
Yep.
But beyond that, we do still do charitable and are part of the community, and we host a lot of things like Music in the Streets here in Winston-Salem. We host things all over our markets, and we provide a lot of value back to our CFO, for example, is on the Second Harvest. He's a treasurer of the Second Harvest Food Bank Board.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just dozens
That's
and
awesome.
Dozens of examples like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we are a nonprofit ourselves and a charitable organization ourselves, in the sense that our mission is to improve those members' lives, many of whom are of modest means.
Mm-hmm. And when you're improving lives, I mean, that makes a difference, and then the word gets out like that. I want to go back. You mentioned HR 1151 earlier, and I was kind of cutting my teeth in the credit union industry at that time. I was like maybe 3 years in, 4 years in, and people were talking, oh, this could be like if things don't go well, this could be the downfall of the industry or whatever. But you were strongly in the mix here. So tell us about that experience, and then, you know, how crucial was this to the industry at that time?
Yeah, it was Armageddon. It really was. So we had added a branch in a little town here called Asheboro for a furniture factory. And the American Bankers Association sued the National Credit Administration for allowing us to do that, because it was their contention that the 1934 Federal Credit Union Act stipulated that a credit union could only serve one employer.
Mm-hmm.
And we, at the time, our primary employer was AT&T, but we had several hundred employers. You know, back in the 80s, NCUA started allowing credit unions to serve more than one employer,
right.
Because you'd have, particularly in the Rust Belt, you'd have a company go out of business, and all the other companies and the community was at risk, so they allowed them to serve multiple companies. So we just happened to get picked, and I later found out why. It was actually one of the bankers in Asheboro who I recently had lunch with,
mm-hmm.
who was the treasurer of the American Bankers Association, and they were sitting around, and he said, well, I have one to sue. And so, you know, so long story short, you know, they sued NCUA over us adding this furniture factory.
Mm-hmm.
And it went all the way to Supreme Court.
Wow.
When I came down here in 95, July of 95, or January 95,
yeah.
it didn't look like it was going to go anywhere. But July of 96, they got standing in the U.S. Court of Appeals in D.C., and that's when we started to worry. And I went to D.C. and interviewed some PR firms, and we started getting busy. And then, of course, the bankers filed an injunction that stopped any credit union from adding any new companies. And it then, long story short, it went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
We formed the Campaign for Consumer Choice. Our attorney that represented CUNA, NAFCU, and NASCUS, and everybody that got together
right.
was John Roberts.
Oh.
John Roberts was our attorney.
Yeah.
Now the Chief Justice of the U.S.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
But in February of 98, we lost.
Oh.
And so the Supreme Court basically said the 1934 Federal Credit Union Act did say that a credit union could only serve one company.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but from July of 96, when we saw the threat, until February of 98, when the Supreme Court ruled, we had built the grassroots campaign for consumer choice.
Mm-hmm.
And many of our members of Congress, including Richard Burr, who's now a senator here, most of them said, if you lose, I will support you in changing the law.
Wow.
And so that's in fact what happened. And we had overwhelming support. And so in August of 1998, we passed the Credit Membership Access Act, which President Clinton signed, which made moot the Supreme Court decision and allowed credit unions to serve more than one employer.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine, except for the Navy Federals and the state employees of North Carolina, how many credit unions today would be where they are
exactly
if they were only allowed to serve one employer.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that Supreme Court, I mean, that legislative victory set the tone for the bankers to kind of back away and say, hey, you know, these guys obviously have the wherewithal, the political grassroots mm-hmm. power to do some things. And so they stepped aside and has allowed us to continue to grow to the point that now we serve, you know, credit unions serve over a third of the U.S. population.
Yeah.
Again, it's a choice. It's a consumer choice.
Right.
And a third of the U.S. population has elected a credit union to help provide financial services to them. So I think had we lost, it would have been horrible.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, there was actually a word back there they used called disgorgement, which is a legal term, which basically they would have gone to the cranes and said, anybody that's not part of that original sponsor has to leave.
Goodness.
Credit union. So, yeah, it was pretty scary.
Yeah, those were interesting times for sure.
An existential moment mm-hmm. for the credit system.
Mm-hmm. Well, thankfully, everything worked out well in our favor, and you know, this is part of the reason why we are where we are right now. So, I mean, the growth has been tremendous over the years. So I want to get back to you because I'm noticing the flags on top of your cabinet over your shoulder. You've had an interesting upbringing. You grew up in Chile, Mexico, Suriname, and the Amazon region and stuff. So how did this kind of international upbringing affect you in your career and your leadership skills? Because I find that, and you've also worked with the World Council as well, going to a number of countries. We talked about that before the recording. So how did all this kind of rounded your leadership skills?
Well, I think it was kind of a happy circumstance, and you know, I graduated from American Graduate School of International Management, or Thunderbird, out in Arizona,
mm-hmm.
which is a pretty small international business school for bankers. And so my first job offer was with Chemical Bank.
Yeah.
And I turned it down for another job with a marketing company, a large marketing company. And that didn't work out. I was supposed to work in Boca Raton, Florida. They said, can you work in Caracas? And I was fine with it, but they weren't going to pay me for it. And so I ended up back in D.C. where I'd been working before. I went out to Thunderbird. I'd actually started my career at the Organization of American States, which is a kind of a UN for Latin America.
Uh-huh.
And I was back there, and I was kind of biding my time on my international job search, and I applied for a job at the U.S. Postal Credit Union and was hired as special assistant to the president and then became controller. And then at a pretty young age, I was hired as CEO for FDIC's credit union. And that board was just fantastic. I mean, the guy that invented Camel was on the board.
Mm-hmm.
Guys that had done the resolution of Continental Bank. And it was just an incredible group of people. And it was quite inspiring. And I couldn't get myself to leave, even though it was relatively small.
Yeah.
You may have seen they later changed their name to the Partnership Credit Union.
Uh-huh.
They've just now merged with NASA Credit
okay.
Union. But and then I got involved with the World Council. I think Brian called me and said, I think you're the only guy on the planet that knows credit unions and Suriname and speaks Dutch and the Suriname Thongo, which is a unique. So you're the only guy on the planet, so you're going.
All right.
I spoke Spanish, so we worked in Guatemala and Costa Rica together, and later Ecuador and Bolivia.
Mm-hmm.
But it just all came together very nicely because I was concerned about going into credit unions. I mean, at the time, I didn't know that there was this international component to it.
Yeah.
And it turns out there's this wonderful, as you know, international mm-hmm. component to it. And so it was, some of it was serendipitous and some of it was just, you know, being in the right place at the right time
yeah.
and the right skill set.
So, I mean, I want to step back a little bit. What's the difference between you when you started in this business and who you are now? Because, I mean,